Hey, welcome to episode 14 of Learning the Ropes, a pro wrestling podcast. My name is Scott.
And I'm Brian.
And this week we're talking about Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar.
That's right, Mr. Paul Heyman over here.
So I sent Brian a list of matches to watch. If you haven't listened to this podcast before, just a quick little rundown. I am a lifelong wrestling fan. Brian is a brand new wrestling fan.
Pretty new.
We started with Macho Man Randy Savage, which was one of the only wrestlers that Brian knew. I gave him a best of list. He watched it. We talked about it. He picked an opponent from that list of matches and so on and so forth. Now we've made our way to Brock Lesnar.
Can I cut in here?
Of course.
So as a new wrestling fan, I think I just like upped my level of wrestling fandom. I just bought my first wrestling t-shirt.
Whoa, that's a big day.
Right?
That's a big day.
Yeah.
I remember my first wrestling t-shirt.
Do you? What was it?
It was for Edge.
Uh-huh.
And it said, "How sharp is your edge?" And had a picture of Edge.
Oh,
on it.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, oh, yeah, mine was Macho Man, and it's that one artist that you really, really like.
Oh, Rob Schamberger?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he had a t-shirt out for Macho Man. That's
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it. I got it for the July 4th special.
We should talk about Rob Schamberger a little bit.
Yeah, tell me about him a little bit.
Okay, so he is, I have a Nakamura shirt from Rob Schamberger, which I think is how Brian found out about
him. Oh, he's got that weird face. Well, I guess it's kind of just like Nakamura's face, period.
Yeah, he's like screaming. And so Rob Schamberger was just a guy who, I knew him from Kickstarter. I donated to his Kickstarter way back in the day.
Okay.
Where he was doing like every champion. Like he's doing an original painting of every wrestling champion or something like that.
Okay.
And I donated it to him, and he sent me a cool spray painted picture of Ric Flair, which I love. And
have I seen this picture?
No. I got somewhere in the move. It's somewhere in this room.
That's
a
right.
Positive of it.
Yep.
And he But we used to talk on Facebook, and he has blown up. He's now, like, they call him, like, the official artist of WWE.
His art is badass.
You got to check out Rob Schamberger. That's a good little plug there.
Unofficial plug, but
yeah.
Official.
But he's a nice guy, and I'm like, super happy for
him.
Yeah,
but anyway, he's got this Macho Man t-shirt that I really, really dig.
Has it shown up yet, or is it in the mail?
No. So my place doesn't get mail very well, so I actually shipped it to your place.
Oh,
yes. So watch out for that one in the mail.
I haven't seen it unless I kept it for myself.
Let me know.
It would not fit. Okay. So these are the matches that I sent to Brian saying, hey, you should watch these.
Oh, by the way, just last week we covered Kurt Angle for anybody who didn't listen. And he wrestled Brock Lesnar, and I chose that match because Brock Lesnar did a crazy shooting star press or tried to do a crazy shooting star press.
He was so close.
So close, but no cigar.
We'll talk about that shooting star press in this episode.
Oh, cool.
So I had him watch Brock Lesnar versus The Rock for the WWE Championship at SummerSlam 2002.
And we've covered The Rock before.
Brock Lesnar versus John Cena at Extreme Rules 2012. One of my favorite rap groups sued WWE over John Cena's theme song because they ripped off part of that part.
Really?
That's from a MOP song.
Okay, part of me like actually hates myself for just doing that.
I understand.
Okay.
We all hate you too.
Damn it!
Brock Lesnar versus CM Punk in a no DQ match from SummerSlam 2013.
This was a badass match.
Lesnar versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania 30, which was the end of the streak.
And we've covered Undertaker before.
But we didn't watch the end of the streak. I thought that was really interesting. I went back and I was like,
well, that was on accident, though.
Oh, it was?
It was.
I couldn't remember why we
You sent it to me
that.
Later. You sent it to me like right around the time to record. You're like, oh shit, I forgot. Because you sent me the follow-up match.
You know what? You're right. That's right. We did watch the follow-up match. Yeah, I looked at it and I just sent him the wrong match. So now we're going to talk about that one. Brock Lesnar versus John Cena again at SummerSlam 2014.
Suplex City, bitch.
Brock Lesnar versus John Cena versus Seth Rollins at Royal Rumble 2015. And finally, Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 31. So those are the matches we watched. Brian, I want to get your thoughts, as always, about what you thought of this week's wrestler before I start mansplaining everything.
Mansplaining?
Mansplain. Have you heard that term
no,
before?
No, can you explain that term to me?
Oh, it's just when men explain things and it's sexist.
Oh,
I don't know if it actually works when a man explains things to another man.
You were just explicitly sexist.
That might just be explaining.
Okay.
I'm not sure how it works.
All right, well, we'll roll with it. So Brock Lesnar seems to not be able, like, he's not great on the mic himself. He is very fortunate to have Paul Heyman as his mouthpiece.
Agreed.
Paul Heyman cut some of the best promos I've ever seen in today's wrestling. And I really, really dig that.
How about in the ring, like athletic
really
style?
Stiff in the ring. Really stiff.
Stiff as in doesn't move well, or
no,
stiff
he,
as in
he kicks a shit out of him.
Got it. Like Japan wrestling.
Yeah, Japan style wrestling.
One thing that always jumps out at me is how fast he is.
Yeah, he's really, really
he's
fast.
280 pounds, and he just flies like a lightweight.
Well, and it's kind of just same with that shooting star press from last week's episode that we were talking about. He shouldn't be able to do that move. Shouldn't be able to, but he does it. I don't really have a good grasp for his personality. Actually, I did a little bit of my own research today. Well, actually, I stumbled upon an article. An interview with Matt Hardy from the past talking about Brock Lesnar a little bit and how he was pushed super fast and how he was pretty humble at the beginning, you know, always saying thank you, thank you, thank you. Saw the nastiest chair shot that Jeff Hardy gave him, and he even said thank you for that. But over time, he just got to be more and more of an asshole in the WWE. Because he just had crazy notoriety, you know, like he had crazy matches.
And we'll get into that. There was a lot more to it than I thought there was.
Yeah. And
that's actually one of the things I'm most excited about talking this
and
week.
I'm excited to get into it as well. But I always like watching him like and this is the thing that I like about wrestling. And actually, just a side note, I didn't like Brock Lesnar at all. Like I made a point of that, I think, in the Macho Man episode. I can't remember.
Yeah, you had seen some of his most current matches. We had seen him in person at a WWE house show that I took Brian to, which was one of his first wrestling experiences ever.
Yep.
And he was anti-Lesnar.
I was anti-Lesnar. I like watching him now. I don't know if I'd call myself a Lesnar fan, but I definitely think he makes for awesome feuds with people. Like I don't want to say that he's like a Big Show because he kicks everyone's ass who he's, you know, who he goes up against.
Sort of the opposite of Big Show.
Yeah. Like, well, they use Big Show for the same, like, you know what I mean?
Though. Oh, you
like
need to beat a giant. Then you face Big Show.
Exactly.
Oh, you need to get destroyed and lose to a giant. Then you face Lesnar.
Right.
I think that's
and
true.
And if anybody beats Lesnar, it's a big deal.
And it has been since pretty much the beginning.
Yeah. And I really, really enjoy that. But,
And then speaking of the beginning,
yeah,
like just to give you some background on him, just so we know who we're talking about. So he grew up on a dairy farm in South Dakota. He has two older brothers, and he's just been wrestling, amateur wrestling, his whole life, a lot like Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
He came from a family
got
of,
them
of
cauliflower
brothers.
Ears.
Oh, yeah. And just has gone to wrestling forever. So Lesnar won a junior college national title. He was recruited to the University of Minnesota, but was short on credits. Somehow he like got into the school, showed up to school to move in, and they said, oh no, you don't have enough credits. You have to go to a junior college in California.
Damn.
So he moved to California and lived in the basement of a wrestling coach. He said he had $400 to his name and started kicking ass. He was awesome. He went All-American at Minnesota. His record was 106-5. So he finished his credits, went back to Minnesota, 106 wins, 5 losses. He finished second in the nation in his junior year, and in the senior year, he won his national championship. So in the NCAA, All-American 99 and 2000, and then the heavyweight champion in 2000. So he's just been a beast, and I know that's what they call him, beast incarnate. He's been that way very early on.
Yeah.
I really love that this episode is coming after the Kurt Angle episode because there are quite a few bridges to be drawn between the two sides. A lot of connections between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar. Both have these amateur wrestling backgrounds and both reached high levels in those. Obviously, Lesnar doesn't have
very
a...
Very fast, too.
Very quickly. You know, Lesnar doesn't have a gold medal like Kurt Angle does.
Right.
But you can't deny that he was a great wrestler.
He is a very dominant athlete.
Very dominant athlete. So what's interesting about him is that Afterwards, he wasn't sure what he was going to do. He finished at Minnesota, and he actually dropped out of school before graduating.
Oh, really?
So he never actually graduated.
Was there a reason in specific?
He didn't want to do the classes, and he just never finished. So he finished his wrestling season.
It's as he said, my job is to get in the ring and hurt people.
Yeah, that's exactly, and that's all he did, and it was just like, and go to class. It just doesn't sound as badass. Yeah,
exactly. So, and do my homework.
So people were asking him, do you want to train for the Olympics? Do you want to try pro wrestling? Do you want to try the NFL? Do you want to coach amateur wrestling? And he wasn't sure what he was going to do. WWE was showing some interest, and he had some tryout invites for the NFL, and the NFL, it didn't work for him. He wanted to play football. And
I can't see him with those itty bitty legs really doing that great in football. Don't get me wrong, he'd be a badass if he could grow them, but I don't know if they grow any bigger than they're currently at.
He went to some tryouts, and they wanted to send him to Europe. And they said, hey, we're not going to sign you to any teams here, but you can go off to Europe and play football. And he said, no, I don't want to leave my family. I want to stay in the United States. Like, I don't like to travel. And that carried through his entire career up until this very day. So he ended up signing to WWE. He met Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, at a college wrestling match, and would go on to get trained by Mr. Perfect and another guy named Brad Renegans, and ended up talking to Jim Ross, and got him signed into WWE.
So was he, like, did he directly sign to WWE, or did he, because I thought that Adam said that, like, UVW or something like that? Like,
yes, UVW, Ohio Valley Wrestling. Yeah, that's where he was. So back in the day, before NXT UVW, Ohio Valley Wrestling. OVW, good lord. OVW.
I was like, wait a second.
Yes, you know.
I feel like...
Ohio, my favorite of the 50 states. Ohio Valley Wrestling. No, sorry. OVW was the developmental league.
Sorry, I'm the one who misled you there. Anyway, go ahead.
For WWE, but before there was like NXT, and before the training center existed, before they were building their own talent in-house, they had these connections to different indie leagues, and OVW was their main one. And they would sign people, and they would send them to sort of the same type of thing on NXT, but without the TV deal.
Right.
So go get in the ring, go work out, go get in front of a crowd, maybe win a title. And it's its own little sort of like UCW here.
Right.
It's just a indie fed. And when he got to OVW, here's who was there at the time. Batista, Randy Orton, John Cena, who was the prototype at the time.
Oh, was he?
And Shelton Benjamin, who we haven't talked about on the show, but is one of my favorite wrestlers. He was a college roommate with Brock Lesnar at Minnesota, and they became a tag team. And so they were in OVW together.
I can't imagine Brock Lesnar tagging with anybody. Like, can you?
No, not today. Definitely not today.
I can't see him. Like, I can see him taking on a tag team.
Yeah, because you don't picture him with friends. And I've seen him do that. I've seen him on two-on-ones, you know? And
oh, yeah.
So he has fought tag teams. That's definitely by himself,
how they,
for sure.
That's how they've booked him late. Or, well, just, you know, his character since he debuted in WWE, it seems.
Vince offered Brock Lesnar $250,000 a year to go to do this OVW.
And that'll take care of all your neck surgeries.
Well, and, you know, when you go into, you know, college with $400 to your name. You know, he was just a really poor dairy kid. They said that life on the farm was completely dependent on what you produce. And if the cows don't produce enough milk, you don't have food. And he just said he was sick of it. He had had enough. Farm life was very difficult. And he said, I'm going to go, you know, make money another way. But I just love these origin stories. Every time I read a biography, I get bored a third way of the way into it, because I'm just like, I want to know, like, who you were before you had any of this and how you got into it. And once you're in it, I get it.
Well, like, what kind of person gravitates towards being a wrestler?
Exactly.
You know?
And this guy's just Brock Lesnar is one of the hardest working people on the planet, and he's a gifted athlete, and he's just like very driven
and very scary.
Very scary. doesn't have a lot of friends, doesn't want a lot of friends, moved back to the country on a farm, got his own, we'll talk about this in a little bit, but had his own private jet so that he didn't have to drive and travel, and he could go home after shows, and it was pretty interesting. So he trained with the guys I mentioned, but also a wrestler named the Big Boss Man, who flipped my dad off once at a wrestling show.
Oh, your dad's like famous now.
My dad, yeah. And so Big Boss Man came out. My dad booed him. My dad was not a wrestling fan by any means. He just took me and my friend to go see a show.
But that crowd is infectious, and you will react.
Yeah, and the Boss Man reacted to my dad, looked straight in the eye, and just flipped him off. And my dad was like, what the hell? Why?
Well, what did I do? Jesus. You booed me.
So he got called up to the main roster, was not in OVW for an extended period of time, but okay. He never watched wrestling growing up. He only had three channels on his TV, which I also grew up with three channels on TV living out in the country.
Enough to flip over to WWF and then WCW.
So that came later.
Oh, okay.
But there was a long part in my childhood where it was just like very little TV. We had a very tall antenna that got us like an Iranian channel. Like, nice. I watched like a lot of like Iranian public access television growing up, and like my dad and I would like know the commercials by heart. So like a new kebab place would open in San Jose, and like we would see it on Iranian TV, and we would be able to like recite these Iranian commercials back and forth. We watched so much television, and then we got a satellite and everything changed. Attitude Era ushered in, and it was the best. But Lesnar got called up to the main roster, and his actual first match was on an Australia-only pay-per-view called Global Warning against Triple H and The Rock in a triple threat match.
That's a pretty badass first match.
I didn't even know there were Australia-only pay-per-views.
Really?
I had no clue that
a
thing.
Is that a thing now?
I don't know.
We don't know. We're not in Australia.
Yeah.
We're in Salt Lake City.
Sure, so. And then his WWE debut, his televised debut, was in the first clip that I sent Brian. And again, these clips and matches will be in the episode description.
Sure will.
iTunes, Podomatic, wherever you're getting this, that will show up. So he shows up in a hardcore match between Spike Dudley, Maven, who won season one of Tough Enough, and Al Snow. And JR pitches him as the hottest free agent. Paul Heyman is already at ringside accompanying Brock Lesnar. So the same way that he is speaks for Brock now, he spoke for Brock since day one.
And it's such a good thing for Brock. I actually really like that character has maintained that whole time.
Yeah, it really only builds credibility for their relationship.
Right, well, because every other wrestling relationship that you'll ever hear about or ever see will always end up in somebody getting hit in the back of the head of the chair. By
and
their best friend.
There have been times throughout the years where Heyman has turned on Lesnar. So there was one time where he hit Brock Lesnar and sided with the Big Show.
Well, and bad idea.
Bad idea. That's the bad wrong idea, horse to tie your cart to.
Sure, he comes a big horse, though.
Did you see that triple powerbomb to Spike Dudley? Can we talk about that for a second? Oh, my God, that was vicious. Like, I didn't watch this debut when it happened. I saw it later. I saw it a couple years later. That Spike Dudley earned my respect for a 180th time by taking the three nastiest, stiffest, hardest powerbombs right in the middle of the ring where, like, Maven, I think, just got, like, thrown out of the ring, and Al Snow got thrown onto a trash can, but then Spike Dudley really took, like, the violent side of this attack, and then that sort of led into, a little bit later, a feud with the Hardy Boys, which is the clip that you were mentioning earlier.
Oh, yeah, well, and it was the interview with Matt, like, he's, like, talking about that match with Brock, and they're talking it out beforehand, and he was mentioning, you know, how Brock wanted to take a chair or take two chairs, and they're like, okay, well, I'll come in first, and then Jeff is going to come in later. And Matt didn't know that Jeff was going to come in as hard as he did, and that chair sounded awful. That cracked across his head like nothing. It sounded like a glacier, you know, rupturing. It was it was really just so loud. But anyway, apparently Brock thanked him afterwards for that one. So
this was back when he was young. I mean, he still loves competition and wants to be number one. And we talked a lot about that with Kurt Angle. Like, he's not afraid to get hurt, and he's not afraid. He's not a weak person.
Well, and can I just say, all the times that he has bled, like, they don't appear to be like bleeding.
It's just like vicious, maybe done it the hard way. Well, for reals.
In one of the
we talked about that off mic about with the John Cena match, the Extreme Rules, where like, we need Cena to bleed. How about I just elbow him in the head over and over?
Elbow
and
the
over.
Shit out of him. But then he takes it. He takes a shot in one of the matches as well, where he runs right into the post, and that post was enough to make him bleed, as far as I could see. I feel like I'm always looking for the sleight of hand.
Right. Where did he blade?
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. I couldn't catch it there, so.
And then Lesnar, he just started building a reputation, and WWE knew that they wanted him to be one of the top guys. And that led to a match with The Rock at SummerSlam 2002.
That's right.
For the Undisputed title.
And that was a solid match.
And a solid training montage in the video package beforehand.
Yeah,
it was real Rocky-type montage.
They didn't seem to do those back then too terribly much. Like, letting us see, like, their training center and whatnot, like, their regimens. And yeah. I know a lot of that stuff was staged.
Totally.
But
probably all of it. But
probably all of it, but I don't know. But yeah, Rock gets a real real fast start. I always really love it when they don't do their full entrance. I always love it when the second guy comes out and just is sprinting.
The fight starts.
Yeah, sprinting towards
the
ring.
I always love picturing the guys backstage like, cut the music, turn the lights on, you know, like ring the bell. Like, oh my God, like they were supposed to stare at each other for another 5 minutes.
Go,
like,
go, 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 go,
yeah.
Go.
Yeah, and you know, Paul Heyman was out on this one. The huge belly-to-belly suplexes. Rock bottom to Paul Heyman through the announce table.
Yeah, like good on you to Paul Heyman for taking a big shot.
I had never seen this match before. This one was new to me. I think I'd seen everything else on this list, but I had never seen this match, and a lot of people were recommending it to us, and I said, all right, well, let's throw it on there. Why not? And this is a lot of people's favorite Brock Lesnar match, and my God, it was awesome. Like, I don't know if it's the number one that I would recommend off the list, but it certainly was, Mike, because there's quite a big break between match one and match two as far as years go.
Yeah.
Match number two was 2012. This was 2003.
Yeah, this was really a fun list because, like, I'm used to, like, going back in the years on the WWE Network to you know, like, going way back to, like, 90 or whatever to watch a match. And this one was, like, 2015. It's just, like, double.
15, 15, just, 16, 17, 17, 17. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But I sort of had to pick one match that sort of summed up his young career in WWE.
Oh, absolutely. This was a great one
to
do.
This was a great match.
Fantastic.
But I just made a little list here of like major accomplishments that Lesnar stacked up in like his first, you know, couple years in WWE. He became the youngest champion in WWE history after he beat The Rock. He won the King of the Ring tournament. He beat Hulk Hogan.
How the hell did that happen?
Hulk Hogan apparently agreed to do the job. I don't know. Maybe.
That's really weird. Oh, and
very weird.
And they had in one of the packages, like, Hulk Hogan apparently was busted open in that match, and Brock had this thing for, like, grabbing the, you know, getting the blood on his hand and wiping it on his chest.
That was pretty badass. I can't lie.
Yeah.
There's a lot about Brock Lesnar that's badass.
He can have that pig face all he wants.
He does kind of have a
He will kick the shit out of you.
Yeah, I hope I never meet him.
He looks like old school Ganondorf from the old Zelda games, where Ganon's more like a pig.
I think it's scary. Even more than the face, I think it's his haircut.
Probably.
And I actually saw
he looks awesome with a beard, though.
Oh, he looks way awesome with a beard.
Yep.
Yeah, he should keep the beard. He beat Undertaker in a Hell in a Cell match. He won the 2003 Royal Rumble. He main evented WrestleMania 19 with Kurt Angle, and that's the match that we talked about last week in the Angle episode. Now, I want to talk about that Shooting Star Press. I have a love-hate relationship with that Shooting Star Press. So who haven't seen the match?
That specific one?
That specific one.
Okay.
So the end of last week, we talked with Adam, and Adam said that that match may be his favorite match, and I think it's definitely in my top 10, maybe even top 5. Kurt Angle versus Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 19 is one of the best matches that have ever happened in the history of wrestling. I can't sell this match enough.
Really?
It all comes down to the very end of the match where Brock Lesnar gets to the top rope. His foot starts to slip. It's clearly like sweaty or wet or something's going on with that. Angle is like 3/4 of the way across the ring. He's way too far away for this.
Way too far.
But Lesnar goes for it anyway. He does the shooting star press and just misses by like a millimeter and ends up landing on his neck. And there have been people who said they were watching it backstage in Gorilla and their first instinct was he's dead. Like, it's that nasty of a bump. If you should just look
up. That's a lot of weight to fall on your neck.
280 pounds.
Yeah.
And same way we talked about with Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
After some of these, you know, neck injuries, it's like if you weren't doing, like, neck bridges for a living,
yeah,
you'd be dead.
Yeah.
You know, like, if I were to land on my neck like that, I'd be dead. And that match, because of that spot, for me, it's a little tainted. If he had hit it, I would say without a doubt, maybe the best of all time. But I always get to that last climactic moment, and I go, ah, damn, that's when he messed up the spot.
See, but what
however...
Okay, all right, go ahead. I'll
however,
let you finish.
It also made it iconic because that is an insane spot to watch, and people always talk about it, and it's exciting. And he gets up. He doesn't die.
Yeah.
He gets up, and he hits him with an F5, and he gets the pin. And
yeah.
So I'm very split on that.
I think that, it, like... For me, it was at the end of the match, and so like that's like when for me, I really love to see. I don't want to say botches or screw ups or whatnot, but evidence that the two guys are just toast. So even though it was a botch, it showed, you know, at the very end that he was just done. He was giving it everything he had, and it for me it added that extra drama to it. Because don't get me wrong, I don't want to see anyone get hurt for real.
Definitely.
I don't want to see that at all.
I think another match that has a lot of moments like that is the Kurt Angle Shane McMahon episode.
Ugh.
They're so worn out.
Well, because they're
through the glass.
They're literally in so much pain.
Yeah. Broken tailbone. I don't know if Shane got concussions. I assume he did. He just lands straight on his head after not going through the glass.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they sell it well. It all, you know, goes into that story. But
right.
I want to talk about that shooting star press because Lesnar used to hit that shooting star press very often. When he was in OVW, he was hitting shooting star presses with ease. He didn't want to do it at this WrestleMania. He's gone on the record and said
oh, really?
That he was talked in, and he won't name who it is, but somebody kept telling him that this will be your WrestleMania moment. This will be your WrestleMania moment. You got to do the shooting star press. And he
Ooh.
Said, I don't want to. I don't feel comfortable doing it. And they're like, you can do it. You can do it. And then, you know, it almost kills him.
Yeah.
And that is
that person is no longer alive. That's why we don't know who it is.
Who knows? Maybe I don't even know if Lesnar remembers who it is. It's just Concussion City over
Ooh.
There. It's just...
Well, and that was a really rough one to watch because you actually saw like a little bit of interaction between Lesnar and Angle. Right there. Like you saw.
Like what the hell are we going to do right now?
Like he's like, are you okay?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they've got their own little in-ring language, you know, that they have that their own way of communicating with each other. You can see it
Definitely.
Right there. It's a very interesting moment.
And getting talked into doing something you're not comfortable with and then having it go wrong. I mean, that was one of many things that was adding to the list of Lesnar's dissatisfactions with WWE as
Interesting.
A whole. He was getting more and more dissatisfied with WWE. He hates to travel, and I can't tell you how much I relate to this. I also hate to travel. I'm in a rap group. I'm in a music group called House of Lewis, and we've always talked about going on tour, and from day one I've said, you guys can go on tour. That would be awesome. I will never go with you on tour.
Interesting.
I have a career. I hate to travel more than anything. I will. That is not a dream of mine to go on the road and do shows like that because
you are the last person who I would assume.
I don't know.
Would
I don't know
be...
what it is. If you put me even a 6-hour drive, the last 2 hours, I am going stir crazy in that car. Let alone 13, followed by beating the crap out of my body in a wrestling ring, followed by another 13-hour drive. I hate it. I can't stand it. I love to travel by plane. If I can fly somewhere, that'd be great. But a road trip is like the definition of hell to me. And so Lesnar ended up buying a private plane and a pilot to fly him everywhere. And then Vince McMahon agreed to pay for the fuel and maintenance, because I think that he knew he was going to lose Brock if he couldn't, you know, make these demands happen for him.
And I'll say Brock has been a staple of the brand since his debut.
Definitely. This is post-Attitude
era.
He's a
high point of the brand for sure.
Huge high point, because you have guys who are starting to leave the company, you know, and their roles are changing, and they're sort of, they needed that fresh, new, young competitor. And I honestly think with Kurt Angle, he's, you know, a foot too short to ever be that top guy.
Kurt Angle. Mm.
And so I think Vince McMahon looks at someone like Brock Lesnar and goes, oh, that's who I wanted.
Right.
I love having an Olympic gold medalist, but we're going to give him a lot of comedy stuff to do. He's not going to be Stone Cold or The Rock. He can be next tier down. But I think he looked at Brock Lesnar and was like, we've got another Rock on our hands. We've got another top level, Stone Cold level wrestler on our hands. But what they didn't realize is that Brock was not going to put up with the bullshit like all the other people we just named. He just wasn't going to do
it. Right. He was not a yes man by any means.
Hell no. And still isn't to this day. He does things his own way, but he packs the house, and he, you know, is still physically dominant and just an insane specimen.
I mean, that's
he gets to play by his own rules.
Well, kind of going back to like not wanting to travel, and also he has a very limited amount of days that he's booked nowadays.
Right, he is definitely part-time.
The fact that he was actually at that Utah show that we went to, a house show of all things.
I don't understand it.
Don't get me wrong.
I had just finished telling Brian that there's no way you're going to see Brock Lesnar at a house show. He's like, oh, is Lesnar going to be here? And I was like, 100% no. Then his music hit.
And then his music hit. And it wasn't like a fantastic match by any means. It was just like a squash match.
It was a house show match.
Yeah, it was a squash match with Big Show. But it was cool that he was there.
I don't get what his deal is now.
Yeah,
it is part time, and I totally get that. Like, show up at WrestleMania, show up at SummerSlam, show up on the occasional Raw. Why he was at a Utah house show, and knowing how much he hates to travel, I like feel bad for him. But was just like, oh, why are you here? Oh, I'm sorry you had to come here. There's a part of Brock Lesnar's book that he wrote with Paul Heyman, where he talks about in 2003 he was at a house show in Miami. And he was set to wrestle The Rock being, you know, one of the biggest stars. But Brock was the champion. The show begins, and Lesnar doesn't know the finish to his match. They're main eventing. And usually by that time of the day, someone has told them, hey, Brock, you're going to win. This is how you're going to win. You guys figure out the rest. So now it's getting it deep into the show, and it's like 90 minutes before their match begins, and The Rock finally tells him the finish. The Rock says, okay, then we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do this, then I'll hit you with the Rock Bottom, and I'll get the pin. And Lesnar starts laughing. He starts thinking, like, oh, this is just Rock kidding around. Like, nobody beats the champ, whatever. Well, it's true. They wanted, it was a non-title match.
It's damn true.
It's damn true. And they wanted Lesnar to lose the match because it was Miami, and that's where The Rock is from.
Oh, interesting. Pandering to the crowd a bit.
But what Lesnar was furious about was not that he was going to lose the match. It was that no one would tell him. Vince didn't mention it to him. The road agent didn't mention it to him. The Rock didn't mention it to him until the last minute. So he was backstage just livid. He just blew up. And he knew at the time, like, he wasn't going to stay with WWE.
Oh, wow.
Like, he knew, he's just like, I got to find something else to do. And he was, you know, another thing that led to him leaving WWE was he had some drug problems.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
He was working hurt, just like every wrestler works hurt. And he, you know, he's gone on the record to say that he was doing way too many Vicodin and drinking way too much vodka, and that there's like a 2-year span of his career that he doesn't remember.
Really?
Because he was just messed up all the time.
Wow.
And so it was just all these things. He was just like, I'm in pain. I'm away from my family. I'm off the farm. I'm just like, every city looks exactly the same. I'm staying, every motel or hotel looks exactly the same. Every restaurant looks exactly the same.
It's just absolutely miserable, it sounds like.
Yeah, he's just like, I would step into a car rental place and just be miserable. And it just all reached a boiling point. And in 2003, he did what you would expect him to do. And he signed a contract extension for the next 7 years.
Wait, what?
Yeah, how crazy is this? He signed for another 7 years.
After he was so sad.
He hated it.
Yeah.
And he signed it.
But he's just a fighter. He just wants to fight.
Exactly.
You know, he wants to fight. But was this a full-time thing, or was this part?
This was a full-time thing.
Wow.
Oh, my God. It was such a weird story backstage. Okay, before we get into this, I have to mention something that I don't want to forget. Zach Gowen.
Yeah, so
I don't want. Oh, I will get into this contract extension, but first we have to talk about the feud between Brock Lesnar and a one-legged wrestler.
Tell me what's going on here, because you sent me these clips, and I don't know what to make of it. Like, this, the kid is badass.
He was an indie wrestler, and he literally has one leg, and sometimes he wears a prosthetic leg, but most of the time he's just hopping around on one leg. If you want to Google him, his name is Zach Gowen, Z-A-C-H-G-O-W-E-N, and this was one of my favorite feuds at the time. I loved this feud.
I love that his mom is ringside as well.
Yeah, they have his mom, like, crying because Brock's, like, destroying this, like, one-legged skinny wrestler. It's not like he's Brock Lesnar but happens to only have one leg.
Not at all.
No, he's tiny and he's young. And they have stuff like Brock pushes him down a flight of stairs in a wheelchair.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
He cuts a promo where he's like, I'm going to break his leg. Not his fake leg, his only leg.
Oh, my goodness. How does anybody get over in this? I mean, I guess Zach Gowen got over, like, crazy.
Oh, people, but, like, I was going crazy for him, and everybody was. And Brock Lesnar gets to be the, you know, the super heel. He gets to be
super heel.
I'm not going to go easy on him. I'm going to powerbomb him just like I powerbomb Spike Dudley.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to drill him into the mat until he's dead.
And Zach Gowen is bleeding like a stuck pig by the end of it.
It was awesome. I really loved that feud.
Yeah, what an interesting thing.
But now we'll get back into the contract extension. I just couldn't miss the Zach Gowen. That's too good. So he signs this contract extension. He dropped his world championship to Eddie Guerrero in 2004, and he started feuding with a guy named Bob Holly, who I guarantee we have not talked about on this podcast at all.
Confirmed.
He also went as Hardcore Holly, and Brock has gone. He says numerous times, "I like Bob. He's a good guy. He's a strong wrestler, but he was not on my level at all. And there's no way the champion should go from, you know, having that belt main eventing these pay per views to 9-minute matches with Bob Holly."
Sounds like he takes himself very seriously.
He does take himself very seriously.
Like, almost to a fault.
And it does, and that's gone back all the way to his, like, amateur wrestling days back in, like, when he was, like, 9 years old. His coaches would say that he would, if he lost or felt he was slighted in any way, he would throw huge tantrums.
Really?
And he was just a hothead and had a huge temper, and he still does. And, he and I would not get along in real life. We're pretty much the opposite person in almost every way. He's so athletic and so driven and has that drive to be, like, number one. And I have hobbies that I take seriously, and I have drive. But at no part of me is just like, I have to be number one, and I'm furious if I'm number two.
And in order to be number one, I have to take out number one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And The Rock actually taught him that. He said when he came into WWE, The Rock told him, you have to be selfish in the wrestling business. You have to watch out for yourself. You can be a nice guy. You can be friends with people. You can be personable. But you have to be selfish, because everyone else is going to be selfish.
Makes sense.
And it's not a bad thing to be selfish. That was The Rock's main thing in, like, Brock's first year leading up to their feud and, you know, eventually taking the title, was like, you have to stay on Vince about everything. You have, well, including, oh, he's not going to tell you the finish to the match until right below, because he knows it's going to make you mad. you have to stay on Vince about everything. You have to look out for number one because everybody's looking out for number one. It's nothing to do with the wrestlers. It's just the sick business that we work in.
You know, and that's partially what I mean, it's really sad that that's the way it is, but like that's partly what I find so fascinating about wrestling. We talk about, you know, the lowbrow nature of it and we all the funny stuff about it, but it's really the psychology of wrestling that just that's what keeps me coming back for it.
I always say that I could never just watch wrestling without knowing the backstage drama.
Like I think that's the lowbrow part of it, right? You know, like, but knowing the backstage part of it, knowing the conversations that happen, knowing the arguments and the frustrations and whatnot, that's what, like, how they arrive to that conclusion.
Yeah, and knowing that something changed backstage and now something that's affecting the on-screen product in a certain way.
Yeah.
I love that stuff.
So interesting.
So after feuding with Bob Holly, Lesnar went into Vince's office and said, I'm going home. I quit. I'm out of here. I'm done. And Vince talked him into staying for the big WrestleMania payday in a match versus Bill Goldberg. Bill was coming into WWE.
Oh, from, interesting.
This was not on the list. It sure was not on the list of matches I sent to you because this match is a garbage heap.
Is it?
This match is a terrible match.
How so?
Neither of them wanted to be there.
Oh,
both
really?
Both of them are too cool for school. Both of them don't give a shit about WWE, and so they just phoned in this match, and it was a huge disappointment, I'd say.
Oh, you mean like their most recent feud? How they phoned that one in?
This was 10 times worse than their new feud. I was like, oh, breathing a sigh of relief for their new feud.
Oh, wow.
That's how bad this old one is. Jeez. If we ever do a Goldberg episode, I'll definitely put
that. Well, from what I understand, Goldberg also hated traveling, and he's actually quite a recluse as well.
Definitely. I think these two have a lot in common. They're both, you know, ex-professional athletes and, you know, had their own quick push to the top. And
it's interesting that, like from what I can tell, athletes that come from, like, a different background other than wrestling seem to have a very hard time wrapping their head around the bullshit of the business.
Of course, because I'm sure, you know, the NCAA has its own bullshit, but it's certainly not, hey, Vince, you should go punch your boss in the face real life
exactly.
to get his respect. Yeah, it's
whereas, you know, like a lot of the dudes who are coming up through the indies and whatnot, they've grown with that business.
You build a callus. You have to.
Oh, yeah.
Because you are trying to get $50 and a hot dog from like the shittiest local promoter.
Right.
And it's the only way you have gas money to get to your next town. It's just the people who make it deserve it. I feel
right.
that way. And even
right.
the people who are, you know, you talk about the Colognes or the Heath Slaters, you know, the guys who are at the bottom of the WWE, those guys have worked harder than I've ever worked at anything.
Yeah.
Just to make it onto the roster.
The people who we would say a bathroom match, I think is what you would, is what you called it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's when you go get a beer, you go to the bathroom, you skip it. They have worked harder than I will ever work at anything.
Yeah.
They have sacrificed more than I'll ever sacrifice for anything. So I'm always, I can be judgmental of the product, and if you're an asshole, I'll be judgmental of you.
Yeah.
But it's just you have to respect. Yeah, you asshole. But you have to respect the hustle that it got, that it took to get there.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely. Because there's so many politics to navigate. It's a minefield.
Yeah, and Lesnar has plenty of that backstage. So he signs this contract that would run out in 2010. And a year into signing that 7-year contract, he asks if he can quit.
Oh, really?
Hey, remember that big old multi-million-dollar contract you gave me? I want to go to the NFL.
The numbers were great.
Yeah, fantastic.
My morale is not.
Yeah, I want to quit. Can I go to the NFL? So WWE was just like, no, you can't go. Can't go, can't go. Vince is, you know, giving him every, you know, plea, just like, Brock, you don't want to do this. Like, you don't want to play football.
Come
you
on,
want to
guy,
wrestle.
You got
to like,
stay around.
We're pushing you to the moon. We're pushing you to the moon. WrestleMania, Bill Goldberg, blah, blah, blah.
Which is true.
He was pushed to the
Nobody gets the push that
but
Brock Lesnar
he's
got.
He's drinking too much.
Except
he's
Roman
taking,
Reigns.
Taking too much Vicodin. He's having a hard
right.
time.
Quality of life is non-existent at this point.
So finally, WWE said, okay, you can go, but you got to sign this non-compete clause. and it specifically forbid Lesnar from working for any Ultimate Fighting companies, so like doing mixed martial arts, UFC, any other wrestling. And Lesnar just said, you know what? Hell yeah. I'm going to the NFL. Screw this. I'm done. He signed it before even hearing back from his lawyer or really reading it, because he was very surprised when things did not work out with the NFL for a second time.
What team did he play for?
He went to the Vikings, I believe. Minnesota Vikings. I believe it was the Minnesota Vikings.
I mean, Vikings. That sounds like what he would try to do, because he likes to stick around his family.
Yeah.
He's from Minnesota.
But he ended up... No, his family was in South Dakota on the dairy farm. But well, he went to the University of Minnesota.
That's close. It's like next door.
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. Geography's hard.
he couldn't get on the team. He got signed as sort of like a practice squad guy, and they cut him because he was starting fights. He'd spent too long in the wrestling business, I think, and he was just... And he has gone on to say that he was starting fights because he was just not comfortable in that practice squad section of the team.
Yikes.
And he wasn't... He didn't know how to navigate in NFL, and so he got out. He was like, all right, I'm cut. That was a silly thing. Hey, WWE... I'm back. Can I come back as part-time and under these things? I want more money for less time. And they were like...
Hell no.
No. And so he said, okay, I'm going to MMA. And they were like, no, you're not.
You can't do that.
You can't do that.
That's
did
a
you
no-no.
Read your contract that you signed? And he said, well,
no,
I
didn't.
Yeah. So he doesn't know what to do. He ends up having to spend a lot of money and do a lot of court appearances to try to get out of this non-compete clause. And he ends up in the I don't know if he thinks that this wouldn't count. Maybe his lawyer said, yeah, go try it. He ends up going to New Japan and wrestles for New Japan,
which is like the number two fed out there
in the world.
Yeah.
But I wonder if he's just like, well, it doesn't count if it's in Japan. It's not really competing. And he ends up winning the IWGP Heavyweight Championship in his debut match in 2005 against Fujita and Chono in the Tokyo Dome. He ends up winning it. And he's one of the few American wrestlers to have ever won that title. AJ Styles won it. Bob Sapp, Scott Norton, and Vader, Big Van Vader. Those are the only Americans who have ever won the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. I always do that.
Champion.
He won the champion. He took him home with him. They're friends now. But WWE was trying to stop him from wrestling in Japan with all these like injunctions. He had some visa issues. He got stripped of the title. And he did not wrestle at all. Not one match from June 2007 until April 2012.
Wow, that's a long time.
So,
I mean... Hopefully he had his money all saved up.
Well, no. He went and got paid a shit ton of money with UFC.
Oh,
so
okay.
He ended up spending a shit ton of money. He said a lot of what he made in WWE got paid to fight the WWE and to get out of the non-compete. And now I will briefly go into his UFC career.
Okay.
Because I know a lot of people, if you're watching nothing but wrestling, you may not know about the UFC stuff. So keeping it brief. He went to a Japanese Fed called, I don't even know if you call them Fed. I don't know what they, organization, fighting organization. It was called.
Is this with MMA?
Yeah, it was called K1 Heroes Dynamite USA. And he faced a guy
named
Min Soon Kim in 2007. And he punched him until he tapped out. Normally, you tap out from punches. Normally, you get knocked out. This guy... it was immediate. The match is a minute long.
Gosh.
Lesnar bolts across the ring, takes him down, punches him in the face until the guy's like, "Oh, I quit. This is maybe forever."
My brain is not turning off fast enough. I gotta
get out
of here.
Where the hell is this ref? Like, I can't knock myself out. So please just stop this. But Dana White
from the UFC. That's horrifying.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It'd be the worst minute of that guy's life.
Oh,
like,
gosh.
You'd have to pay me a lot of money if it was like...
He will either always remember that or never be able to.
Yeah. Lesnar was not being taken seriously by UFC.
Oh, really?
Dana White was not returning his phone calls. So Lesnar did what Lesnar does, and he bought a ticket to an event
Lesnar
and literally
smash.
Jumped past... jumped over a guardrail, pushed security out of the way, and went and grabbed Dana White and said, hey, we should talk. Well, when a giant tells you that you should talk, you talk.
Well, and also, I can only imagine how he grabbed him, judging by how he grabbed one of the refs for...
Oh, when he grabs Charles Robinson? Yeah, just picks him up by the belt?
And just, like, chucks him into the ring?
Oh, my God. That was one of my favorite moments. He signs a one-fight deal with UFC against a legend, Frank Mir, and they wrestle, or they wrestle.
They wrestle.
They fight. They
hit the ropes real hard.
They sports entertain in 2008, and he ends up losing. His first UFC fight, his big debut, he loses, and he taps out from a knee bar. It was a pretty even matchup, but Lesnar sort of like left his leg open in a really amateur way.
Forgot leg day.
The legend just jumped on him, tapped out, and he was super sad. He was just like, my UFC career is over. I can't go back to WWE. I'm not in the NFL. Like, yeah. I'm a failure. Which, somebody that big in athletics and just, like, who works that hard to be a failure, that's crazy. But what ended up happening is he goes backstage, and Dana White is ecstatic. He's just like, that was an exciting fight. I want more Brock Lesnar.
Oh, wow.
I don't care that you lost. Like, you're good. So signed a second fight for 6 months later. And he wins unanimous decision after round three. He was clearly the most aggressive guy.
I would never want to go three rounds with Brock. I would never want to go 15 seconds with
Brock. No, 15 minutes is a long time to go. And then his third match was for the heavyweight championship against Randy Couture, and he wins. Couture held his own. The crowd was super hot for it. And then Brock got, like, this great punch in. And then same with the first guy. He just sort of punched him in the face over and over and over and over. This time the ref stopped it. And he won a rematch against Frank Mir. And things were looking good. He was the champion. He was getting paid a lot of money. And then he got diverticulitis.
Oh, really?
Which is a
that's when your insides want to be your outsides.
Yes. That is accurate. It's an intestinal disorder where sort of like fecal matter is leaking into your colon and intestines, and it's a bad deal.
As I said,
your insides want to be your outsides. Yeah, it's real bad. So he ended up almost dying from it.
Oh, damn.
And his fighting career was almost ended by it. And it was just, the doctor said, you've been dealing with this for about a year. And he said, I have? You know, like, I mean, I knew it was bad, but I didn't know it was that bad. And so he went up to his brothers in Canada and almost died in Canada, and then got brought back down to America, had a surgery, and he was fighting again by July 2010.
Jeez.
He beat Shane Carwin and then lost the title to Cain Velasquez. And that one, Cain just punched him out.
I think I've seen that match.
It is a classic.
Yeah.
That one, you can Google it. It's on YouTube, I think. Brock Lesnar versus Cain Velasquez. That was a good fight.
Yeah.
He coached the Ultimate Fighter, was supposed to face the other coach of the other team, Junior Dos Santos, but he had to have another surgery because of the diverticulitis. I practiced all week to say that damn name. They had to remove a foot-long piece of his colon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
wow.
He had much more major surgery, and then he was just like, I can't do UFC. Ever. Man. I'm done.
Wow.
Because they just took a foot of my colon. I'm going back to WWE. And then that clip I sent you where Cena's standing in the ring, Lesnar comes back, huge surprise. Oh, for everybody who knows about Brock Lesnar guy, I think this was possibly his debut. There's a super fan. We haven't even talked about super fans yet.
No.
Tonight, when we watch Great Balls of Fire, because that's happening later today,
yep.
I will point out to you, guy, I would bet you $10 that there is a guy, hard camera side, so you know he's trying to get himself over.
Oh, I see.
In a lime green t-shirt, fat guy with a lime green smiley face
t-shirt.
Okay,
I'm going to watch for it.
Well, he will start driving you crazy, because he somehow has the best seat in the house every show.
Oh, really?
He must be a millionaire. I don't know how he does it. There's a few of these super fans And Brock Lesnar guy is this like douchey looking guy in like a like an Affliction t-shirt.
Gross.
Yeah. And he does this thing where Brock Lesnar does this like pose at the top of the ring. And then it cuts to Brock Lesnar guy, which is he's now been dubbed, and doing the same thing. And now you'll see Brock Lesnar guy show up over and over and over.
Oh.
Mick Foley's daughter, Noelle, is dating a super fan right now named Frank the Clown.
No.
Oh, it is.
No, damn it.
Super
you
fans.
Don't date the super fans.
No, it was, yeah.
Tell the super fans to get a damn life.
Yeah. I mean, I'm mostly just jealous.
I'm jealous too. Yeah, exactly. I'm angry because I'm mad. I'm mad because I'm angry.
Lesnar comes back and he snaps Triple H's arm. Because in the storyline, Triple H wouldn't give him a private jet and wouldn't turn the name Raw into Monday Night Raw starring Brock Lesnar.
When he wants it for Christmas, he wants it.
He wants it bad.
He needs it because he wants it.
So they wrestle at SummerSlam 2012, and he snaps Triple H's arm again. And then he snaps Shawn Michaels' arm.
Yeah,
later
they made
on,
mention of that in one of the packages.
Yeah, so. And now we get into the final chapter here. This is Brock Lesnar versus John Cena, the beginning of our matches.
Woo! These matches with John Cena.
This is only
Cena.
Match number two yeah. on the list of matches because there was so
There's
much.
There's a lot to talk about. You know, like when we're learning the ropes, we're definitely... I want to know everything about these guys.
Yeah.
And I'm getting very well educated now. And I hope you guys are enjoying it as well. I love it.
Yeah. You've had your first lesson in LOL Cena Wins. Which is a meme that goes around about Cena.
And oh, yeah.
This was around, the, you know, 2012 through 2015. If Cena was in a match, Cena was winning. You know, almost
well,
always.
So, but he didn't win these ones.
He won the first one.
Did he win the
he
first one?
He won the Extreme Rules
one. Oh, that's right, because Brock Lesnar kicks the shit out of him.
For like 15 minutes.
For 15 minutes. Well, and he comes out real hot with the elbows.
Yeah, bust Cena open.
Bust Cena open and Cena,
hits him with a chain.
Cena does not look great. You know, like he doesn't look like he looks like he's seeing stuff. He doesn't know where he is.
He
know?
Has like no offense for the entire match.
And then suddenly he pulls out the steps and does a attitude adjustment on that.
Yeah, hits him in the chain. Hits him in the face with the chain. AA onto the steps.
Brock,
Cena wins.
Yeah, Cena wins. Not for long though, because we have a rematch.
Yeah, we have the rematch at SummerSlam 2014.
This match...
Oh, my God.
This one was... Like, even when I wasn't watching wrestling, this was something that was on Facebook. This was something that was everywhere. Suplex City, bitch. This was... I don't know how many suplexes were in this match.
There were 16 suplexes
16
in this match.
16 suplexes.
Mostly German, but some belly-to-bellies.
Some belly-to-bellies. But anyway... Yeah, Cena. Well, the saddest part about
this—it's pretty much the exact opposite of their match earlier.
Yeah,
where no, it's about the same.
No, it's about the same, but it just different
ending.
Yeah, it's just like the ending that should have happened in the Extreme Rules match.
No one was expecting this.
Well,
no one was expecting this.
And I'll tell you who was expecting it the very least was that poor little boy that you can absolutely hear. Let's go, Cena!
Let's go, Cena!
Let's go, Cena!
More and more desperate as the match goes on.
And it just...
God, that little trooper just wanted Cena to come back and win so bad.
And I wanted Cena to come back and win for that little trooper.
It was not
but
going to happen.
It was not going to happen. And also, well, I've got my own reasons lately for not digging Cena so much. Actually, we'll talk about it off air, but an interview with him talking about Chris Benoit it was very, very interesting.
I saw that clip. Let's talk about it on air.
Oh,
I think
yeah?
That's interesting because we did a Chris Benoit episode and,
yeah.
You know, if you didn't watch it, he killed his wife and kid.
Yeah. In an interesting way, and there are things that, you know, like
a lot of moving parts.
A lot of moving parts happening with that whole deal. But basically, Cena says that Chris Benoit was at like worth nothing because of the bad thing he did. And he says, because you have to take into account the bad things he did, and that, like, I don't know, somehow it has to even...
He was
he just was speaking nonsense to me. It didn't make sense.
I thought it made sense.
Really?
I understood where he's coming from.
I understand where he's coming
from.
First
of all, he's Mr. Company Man. So that's... He's spitting the company line.
It's true.
But it's... He was at, like, a Comic-Con or some panel event, and somebody asked, you know, how do you feel about Chris Benoit not being in the Hall of Fame or something like that? And, you know, you guys... WWE kind of ignores the legacy of Benoit now. Yeah, and Cena says, like, look, he was one of the most talented wrestlers there ever was. However, that gets overshadowed the second you do something horrible like that. And we are not in the business of promoting ourselves, you know, after something like that happens. I get where they're coming from.
Yeah, but I think that there's, like, to ignore that there was a need for help for Benoit. Like
there is a huge part of not taking responsibility,
like not,
for
yeah, like not taking care
concussions, medical testing, time off, mental checks, drug tests. I mean,
he was in a, like, sorry, just the whole setup of how that shit went down. There's a lot of psychological stuff going on. The way the deaths. We don't need to get.
You can go back and listen to that Chris Benoit.
Yeah,
episode.
We don't need to get back into that. We don't need to go into the weeds. But anyway, just. For me, it's not so black and white. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's a horrible thing, but there's so much more to
right.
it. But anyway, that just rubbed me the wrong way with John Cena. So I was okay with the
with watching him get the shit kicked out of him forever. I mean that match, no one was expecting it. Everyone was expecting Cena to probably win, or at least it to be very close. But instead, you just watch Lesnar dominate Cena for 15 minutes and then just pin him. No one since his debut has manhandled Cena like that. Yep. It was amazing.
It was from what I understand, it was much needed at the time. But it kind of,
we were so sick. Most wrestling fans were so sick of Cena winning every match. You would debut a new guy like Bray Wyatt and you would build them up and then strike them down to Cena. Let's talk briefly about, we've done an Undertaker episode. I want to know what you think about Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker.
That was a badass match. The thing is like, this one goes into what I'm talking about with those finishes, where it just, they feel like, you feel like they're so tired by the end and they're just desperate to win.
Yeah.
And it's like where the finishes are almost there, but then they get reversed into another finish. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like 3 F5s and tombstones and,
well, but even then it's just like, you think that he's going to get a tombstone, but somehow he reverses it into an F5. You know, that stuff, like, that builds up the drama so much. So this was like, an Undertaker's a master at pacing as well, because, like, he has slow matches, but for some reason, I can watch an Undertaker match so much more willingly than a Triple H match.
Triple H is hard for me, too. I'm a Triple H fan, but not a super fan.
Well, I
respect his place in the
exactly.
business.
Exactly. I respect him, but like you asked Brian, what do you want to watch? I'm going to say Lucha Underground, of course. But which is the opposite.
We almost made it a whole episode with no Lucha Underground.
No plug. Way. I got my pink mask and everything.
Awesome.
But I don't know. This was a fun match, and just the crowd pop, the crowd reaction, I'll never get over that. I'll never get over, just like, they don't play Brock Lesnar's music when he pins the Undertaker.
It was perfect.
For a long time. They let that silence, well, not silence, but they just let that just play out for a while.
It was
just let everybody take it in.
I think I counted how long it was. I can't remember. Oh, I did. It was 40 seconds of silence.
Yeah.
No one thought the streak was going to be broken. Undertaker had never lost at WrestleMania for 21 years, and he had built up the WrestleMania
streak.
Sure
as hell
wasn't
going to happen now.
No, and not to Brock Lesnar, and no one really saw it coming. Third F5, I was with Q1 and Adam.
We were
watching WrestleMania at Q's house, and he, we were sitting there probably, you know, 10, 15 people in the room, and we're kind of bored. The match is not that great.
No.
And then all of a sudden, it's just, you know, another F5. Oh, great. He's going to kick out of a third F5. Like, all right, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And the same silence that was in the arena was in the room with us.
Really?
It was stunned silence.
You had the Surrender Cobra going.
Exactly. 40 seconds of silence, and the graphic pops up that says 21-1. Ladies and gentlemen, the winner of this match, Brock Lesnar. Cut to the crowd. They're freaking out. I mean, we start freaking out. I mean,
yeah.
It was a very predictable-looking WrestleMania, so it was just the WWE Network had only launched 41 days prior to WrestleMania. So there was a lot of pressure to see if it could handle the high volume of WrestleMania. And a lot of people knew where Daniel Bryan was going to go during that thing. And so it was just sort of like, it sort of seemed like an easy one to guess how everything was going to change. Right.
But I love that because actually we get into that in later on in the Royal Rumble with Seth Rollins. I don't want to talk about that one quite yet. But no, I really like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's just so unpredictable. Cause I think that's actually what like just pissed me off about, Money in the Bank, the last, pay-per-view.
Sure.
Just very much by the numbers.
Oh, you thought
For the most part. I mean, except for the women. Well, the women's match is the exception.
Right.
You know, And that one is just poorly handled. But, you know, kind of going back to these matches, though, I mean, that should have been Undertaker's retirement. That was the best time to retire him, either that or his follow-up match with Lesnar.
And the follow-up match with Lesnar that we watched during the Undertaker episode is actually a lot better.
It's great.
You know, I think Lesnar brings a lot out of his opponents. But then there are some other people, like he wrestles CM Punk. And I think CM Punk has always brought a lot out of his opponents.
He kicked the shit out of him,
too. This was a good match.
Like, it's hard for me sometimes to see a little guy go up against a big guy, but I love when the little guy can make me believe it.
And CM Punk is a great littler guy. Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, even Chris Jericho, you know, who's, you know, somewhere in the middle there, but I love those smaller guys. CM Punk is one of my very, very favorites. Let's talk about Lesnar versus John Cena versus Seth Rollins at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, this was interesting.
A lot of interference from J&J Security.
Yeah. Too much for me to really bite on. Like, where they actually, like, get in the ring and do a full-blown, like, move on him. And they're like, the ref is powerless. I'm like,
I thought this was a good match.
It was a good match.
But I certainly liked Lesnar versus Roman Reigns a lot more.
Yeah.
And I will say, I was there for that.
Were you?
I was. Name dropping events I got to go to. But this one was close to back home for me. It was like an hour away from my dad's house. So I went to go see Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. You were sitting on a Roman Reigns chair, but it's not from that event.
I am sitting on Roman Reigns' face right now. It is. But no, I am. This Roman Reigns match, though, I guess they were trying so hard to put him over. Like, they have him entering through the crowd, you know, they're still trying everything to put this guy over. They're saying, this is the guy.
Right.
And nobody wants him.
No, the crowd there, I mean, Mania is always filled with nerds like me.
Yeah.
And so we were very anti-Roman, very pro-Lesnar. And then the Suplex City Bitch hashtag begins.
Oh, was that when it began?
That began. So it wasn't first time.
Okay.
I don't know why. We saw a pop-up on the screen where it was like hashtag Suplex City. And we were like, what the hell is Suplex City?
Okay.
And it's because he starts doing the same thing that he did to Cena.
Yeah.
Where he just suplex, 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 which I think is actually his most boring feature now.
It really is.
It was like a great thing to do against Cena. Even during this Roman Reigns thing, it was pretty cool.
Oh, he loves it, though, because it keeps him.
He loves it.
Because it keeps him nice and safe.
Oh, yeah. He just,
you know,
has to hurl bodies around.
That's right.
But all of a sudden, it just popped up Suplex City, and we're like, what the hell is that? Apparently, during the match, and you can hear him if you go back and watch it, he yells, Suplex City, bitch!
That's right, he does.
And T-shirts and bumper stickers.
Oh, yeah.
And shot
Never
glasses.
Buying that T-shirt.
But now, we were talking about the interference with J&J Security.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
But now we have not really interference. I mean, this is all within WWE kayfabe, totally allowed to happen, but this has never happened before.
Yeah.
You have Seth Rollins, his music hits, and he runs down the ramp.
And he is booking it.
He's booking it, and that is a long ramp. And he cashes in his Money in the Bank briefcase, which gives him a title shot
wants. I've never seen this happen before.
This was your first cash
in? This was my first cash in that I've ever seen. And I loved it. However, I will say, okay, sorry, going back to the Seth Rollins Roman Reigns, I can't even keep it straight. John Cena Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins match, because Seth Rollins didn't really, he wasn't really able to do anything in this match because Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar had kicked the shit out of each other. He takes the suplex really, really well. I actually really like how he can like land on his feet. I dig that move. I think that's actually
he's super athletic.
He does it twice. But anyway, going back to this one, I really loved that drama. It's the same thing with The Undertaker, you know. What I don't dig so much is when the the announcer's like, genius, genius. So good or whatever. I don't, and they're putting it over so hard
right.
to the point where I'm like, yeah, I get it. You know, it's just like, all right, enough. Just let me enjoy it.
But I just I liked think it. You got to make it big for WrestleMania.
It was great.
It's the first time someone's cashed in to make it a triple threat.
And
normally
he,
what
and he
happens,
pinned Roman Reigns.
Right. Doesn't pin the champion.
Right.
Setting up, you know, a feud to go on from there. What's interesting is that, like, he, with that money in the bank, like, everyone wanted Lesnar to win. No one wanted Reigns to win. What we didn't realize is that there was a third option.
Right.
And in the past, every time someone cashes in, it's right after a match is over. So you wait until somebody has been beaten down even further until they get pinned or tap out, and then you cash in.
Right.
This was the first time to come and make it a triple threat match, which
yeah.
is not as genius as waiting 10 more minutes for them to keep kicking the hell out of each other.
Yeah.
But it worked, so, you
know. Well, it's a great way to start a new feud.
There's curb stomps, and there's spears, and Seth Rollins walks out the champ, and I go home happy, and it takes me 3 hours to get out of the parking lot, and it's just, you know, it's a real mess.
So how did the crowd pop for that?
Maybe the loudest pop I've ever.
Really?
When Jericho came back to the Royal Rumble, that we talked about that during the Jericho episode, he says that's like the loudest pop he's ever received. I agree. That was insanely loud. But this one, when Rollins comes out, huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
What I love about the WWE universe, or just like people who love wrestling, is that we're passionate about it. Like I said, I screamed at that one match when Rey Mysterio wanted to know if he should shake the hand of that individual who I did not like. We let you, like, we make it known when we don't accept something that's happening. And I really dig that, because in these Cena matches, actually in the Cena, I think it's the, oh shoot, which
was
one
it
was
the
it?
Triple threat or the,
I think it was the
16 suplexes one.
Oh shit. I think it was the triple threat. Yeah. It was a triple threat. The crowd hates him. Like, it is, like, the even the announcers are like, oh, it's a unique crowd here. It's
oh,
like,
yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And when Reigns is coming out, even though they are trying so hard to put him over.
Yeah.
You know, right. Having him come through the crowd, like, I'm your champion or whatever, you know, like, pulling a rock on us. Totally rejected.
Definitely.
And I don't know, that's one of the things that I really, really love. Even though we don't always get what we want, sometimes it just, I don't know, like, because Reigns is still being pushed to this day.
Although, tonight is Great Balls of Fire, and he is actually towards the top half of the card for me. I'm more excited.
You're excited
for
to see
the,
him?
Yeah, the Reigns-Strowman match. Yeah,
and
I'm
the
more
thing
excited
is,
about that than Bray Wyatt-Seth Rollins.
Oh, well, that's, I think that's the bathroom match, right?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Those are two guys that should be the top guys.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of bored by both of them.
Right. Well, they don't have really any cool feuds going right now. But, yeah, I don't know. The jury is out for me with Roman Reigns, because I haven't seen too much of his stuff.
Yeah.
I remember him botching and botching and botching on or in WrestleMania this year.
Oh, yeah.
And then I remember.
Yeah, you've been very unforgiving of that, and I love it.
Well, it's just because, like, it's The Undertaker. You are putting The Undertaker out.
In his retirement match.
You're retiring The Undertaker.
Don't mess up
Don't
the tombstone.
Don't fuck it up.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah.
I just, to briefly go over where he's been over the past year, he went and fought for the UFC again. He fought at UFC 200, which was their big, big, big show. He faced Mark Hunt and ended up winning. He got paid $2.5 million, the most a fighter had ever been paid for a fight.
Wow.
$2.5 million
for a 15-minute
fight. And but afterwards, it turns out he failed two different drug tests. And was suspended from WWE, or God, not WWE. They welcomed him back with open arms, actually.
Come back, please.
But it was changed to a no contest. He was fined $250,000, which is only one-tenth of the money he won for that fight.
Still had both of his millions of dollars.
Yeah. He tested positive for an estrogen blocker named clomiphene. So I don't know.
I'm real afraid of getting the man boobs.
I guess so.
Stop that right in the bud.
He feuded with The Undertaker again. That ended in a Hell in a Cell match. Feuded with Dean Ambrose, which ended in a terrible no-holds-barred street fight match. Feuded with Randy Orton, which ended with a violent fight at SummerSlam where he busted open Orton the hard way. And that's
talked about that on the Jericho one.
It's just you just hit him with elbows until he busted him open, and because Vince doesn't want people blading anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, it happened by accident. Vince, also, Orton's got concussions, and it's very frustrating. Feuded with Goldberg, ended with him winning the Universal Championship at WrestleMania 33. He has not wrestled since WrestleMania 33, I don't believe, and now he is facing Samoa Joe tonight at Great Balls of Fire. So that's where we are with Lesnar.
We're not sure if he's wrestled since WrestleMania.
I can't remember.
Okay.
I don't know that he's defended his titles since then.
No.
But he's very much part-time.
Yeah.
He comes back, he brawls with people, he fights
people. And next
people.
Episode, I mean, we're running a little long now, but next episode we should talk about part-timers a little bit.
Yeah, we should.
And what the opinion is on that, because I actually really dig the Lucha Underground method of seasons.
I like seasons too.
You know?
I like having an off-season.
So anyway.
Just to wrap up Lesnar, he feels like an old-school, huge, unbeatable giant. Like, he's kind of scary.
Yeah.
In a real way.
He plays a very important role.
Yeah. Let's do story time, and then I'll have you pick your pick next week's guy.
Okay.
Just I'll run through these because none of them are huge, big stories, but they're things that I found funny. Brock Lesnar ended up with Mark Marrow's wife and his finishing move. So Mark Marrow was married to Sable. Well, now Brock Lesnar is married to Sable. Mark Marrow used to do the Shooting Star Press, and the F5 is pretty close to his shoulder spin-around cutter move. I don't remember what it's called.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, Brock Lesnar sort of was just like, Mark Marrow, I'm taking everything that you have.
I am Mark Marrow.
Yeah. There was a great Undertaker-Brock Lesnar stare-down at a UFC event after Lesnar lost the title to Cain Velasquez. They were interviewing The Undertaker, and then Brock sort of enters, and they have like a what, you want to do something? You want to fight? Turns out WWE kind of had planned that to happen.
Oh, okay. And that was a kayfabe.
That was sort of kayfabe, but not within UFC.
Okay, because Brock Lesnar and Undertaker had a big old feud, like a violent feud leading up to their follow-up
Definitely.
Match.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Another story about wrestling on an airplane.
Oh, yes.
You travel that
wrestlers
much.
Wrestlers on an airplane.
It's going to happen. So this was part of the plane flight from hell, which we'll get into some other time. But Lesnar and Hennig, Mr. Perfect, the guy who trained him, were wrestling around, and they hit the emergency exit door. And
what?
Mr. Perfect ended up getting fired over it because it was sort of deemed his fault for goading Brock into it. Turns out it's like impossible to push that door open. Like, there's just no way.
It's just some,
the
just
pressure of the air outside.
Oh,
it will keep it closed. But terrifying for everyone on that plane.
Yeah, not everyone knows that.
The announcers for Brock Lesnar's first MMA fight when he was in Dynamite USA were Mauro Ranallo from NXT, who's back on NXT, and Bill Goldberg. Weird. I was sitting there watching
it, and I was like,
that is an odd.
What does that even sound like?
And they weren't bad, honestly, but it was, I had no clue.
Wow.
At the time, I haven't looked in to see if this was has changed, but at the time, Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar was the only WrestleMania main event where both wrestlers used their real names.
Interesting.
So it's...
And now everybody does it.
I mean, like...
Velveteen Dream. His first name is Velveteen, his last name is Dream.
Lesnar took
very weird roll call in grade school.
Mr. Dream? Lesnar only took 3 years to go from training to main eventing WrestleMania. It was the shortest in WWE history.
Wow.
Brock Lesnar is red-green colorblind, so he wanted to go in the military, but he couldn't. And finally, when Shinsuke Nakamura, when he was a young lion, he trained with Brock Lesnar in his personal gym to gain muscle mass.
And that muscle mass didn't go anywhere.
Well, it was bigger now than he was then.
Yeah. Well,
so I had a lot of trivia. I just kept writing all this stuff down.
It's great. No, there's always so much to know about these guys.
And speaking of trivia, follow us on Instagram at the LTR Podcast.
At the LTR Podcast.
Write us iTunes reviews. Thank you to everyone who's done it. It makes a huge difference for us. Rate us 5 stars. Write us a sentence or two about why you like the podcast. Really appreciate it. And here are the people that you can pick who we haven't done an episode about yet. We got John Cena, CM Punk, Seth Rollins, and Roman Reigns.
All right, I'm going to go with CM Punk, even though we didn't really talk about him too terribly much.
I've been waiting for a CM Punk episode for a long time. I'm very excited.
Awesome.
Tune in next week. We're talking about CM Punk. Thanks for listening.
This has been Learning the Ropes.